I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 560. Good-looking water is the hallmark of a great game.
Welcome to Electric Sisterhood, home of the best,
the fucking best,
girl gaming to gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi, sis.
How you doing?
I'm alive.
Your energy seems like a little low. Like, I'm breathing in and out.
Sure. I had my dunks run. I had my, like, morning BM. Like, things are on level. Like, I'm on par today. Like, schedule's not too high, not too low. Right. Like, it's just a day.
It's a day. It's another day. In the neighborhood. Just another day around the way.
So, that's what's up. That's
feels lovely.
Could be better. It could be a whole lot worse.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like when it's like overcast, it's really hard to like be high energy, which is why I had two coffees before we came into doing this podcast.
Well, I mean, if I were doing like photography right now, overcast days are like the best days for that. So like, I'd be super pumped. But you know, I'm just a girl trying to get her nuts. So what's up?
You're just living that life. I feel you. So we got a bunch of stuff to talk about on the podcast this week. I'm going to jump right in and kick it off with a few minutes of Destiny. Not me playing, but some stuff that's come up, some news that I want to share, just in case you haven't caught up with it. So Destiny on the PC released recently, and it looks bananas awesome, especially if you have, you know, a machine that allows you to run it at the optimum specs, which is not, you know,
optimum specs!
You gotta have, like, a lot of memory on your graphics card if you want to run it optimum. But if you do, it looks bananas gorgeous on a PC. But there was a little bit of controversy after the release. Well, not controversy. I don't like to use that word a lot.
Are we talking, like, ass and titties controversy?
No,
someone's embezzling money controversy?
No. But basically, what happened was there were a lot of people who got the PC version, jumped into or attempted to get into Crucible and just the main game and found themselves locked out. There were a lot of people who got banned and they weren't doing anything bad. They weren't running any kind of cheating software, things like that. But there was a little bit of a snafu that basically gave people the ban hammer that should not have gotten the ban hammer.
Got it.
In the game. And so that caused a lot of people to be like, yo, what's going on?
And it's like, I'm just a model Destiny citizen, just trying to get my tokens.
Well, there was
just trying to do my public events.
I finished creating my character, jumped into play the first game, and right after I got through the tutorial level, basically, was told that I was bumped off the server, and I'd been banned. Like, what happened? You know,
especially it's like, was I just too good?
Right,
like, was I too good in my tutorial?
Y'all got my money, I should be able to pay. What's going on? So the Destiny team had to do some digging, and the Bungie team, you know, finally was able to figure out what was going on and fix it for those people and were able to unban them and let them get back in and get play. But it's just one of those things where, you know, for me, I look at the situation and it's like, not every launch goes without its issues. But when a game has been out for almost a month on your other platforms, you should have been able to spend the time that you needed to make sure that your launch on this other platform was flawless.
Like, hey, A-Team Console, can you guys, like, go over and help, like, A-level computers just make sure we're on the same page? Thanks.
Well, basically, you had, you know, for the Bungie team set up, the way that it works is that you have the dev team and the live team. And the live team had been so focused on working and supporting the dev team with the console releases getting things worked out. You know, there was the glitch with the bureaucratic walk that if you use that emote and you were standing against a wall, when you kicked it off, it would let you glitch through the wall. So some people were cheesing Crucible and cheesing the raid was that they were going through the wall so that they wouldn't get
I really damaged. Wish we'd stop attributing cheese to negative things besides constipation. Like,
I don't think cheesing is bad. If you could spend the time to find an exploit, good on you, I say, because that's like, a level of puzzle solving.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned. That's, my husband says that to me a lot. I'm like, you're cheating. He goes, nope, if it's in the game, it's legit.
I don't disagree with him. Like, you know, if you didn't QA enough that I'm able to find an exploit...
Well, then that's just me being really good at your job.
Well, think about it this way. Like, you have to think of, well, let me try this to see what happens. That's a lot of trial and error. So it's not like it's just, like, something that happens and you do
right.
it. You're testing stuff. So I don't see cheeses as a bad thing.
Because some people are like, really man, I cheese that. Like, they, you know, it's one of those.
I guess I'm one of those weird people. I don't see cheesing as a bad thing.
Outside of, like I said, plugging up my BMs, like, I still eat that cheese dough.
You know,
like,
I don't.
I'm all about that cheddar, baby.
I'm engaging in this conversation. I don't think cheesing is a bad thing. As long as it is, you know, not a... I think, for me, there's a difference between... cheating and cheesing. So cheating to me is like using unlocked
not established codes in the software to be able to manipulate the system to your positive outcome.
If you were using a Game Genie or a Game Shark or something, to me that's cheating.
Yeah. But you paid for that Game Shark.
Remember Game Shark?
Finding
a exploit or a wall that you can walk through that, you know, you weren't supposed to be able to walk through, but you found it and you can, and it allows you to get someplace faster. I don't consider that cheating. And so, you know, more power to you, work it to your advantage and have fun as long as, you know, you're doing that. Now, if you're creating programs to let you mod things outside of what the game was supposed to let you do, to me that is cheating and that is wrong, and that's not taking advantage of an exploit or a bug, that's just straight up cheating. And so, you know, it's a little more difficult to do on the console side of the world, but it's, you know, very easy to do on the PC side. So to me, those are kind of like different levels. But I do think that for me, if you're going to release your game, you know, I know that every dev house works to release a game in the best possible working light that there is. But when you have a game that's so big and you have such a delay window between when it's coming out on platforms, it should be closer to near perfect. And things like, you know, auto ban hammer happening on release is something that, you know, shouldn't happen and should get addressed quickly. And the Bungie team, to their credit, you know, they worked very, very hard to quickly figure out what the issue was, get it resolved, and get people back in the game. But PC users are already feeling like redheaded stepchilds because their release for the game was almost a month later after the consoles. So to have an issue once they're finally able to get their hands on it definitely left a nasty taste in people's mouths. So I'm hopeful that there won't be any more rocky issues at the beginning of the game for PC users, and that the remaining kind of things that Bungie's working on get resolved quickly. They called off and put a halt to Trials of Osiris and to Trials of Nine and the Iron Banner because of the emote exploit. So they've stop that for a couple of weeks while the team is focused on trying to fix that. And that'll come in a hot fix that they put out once they're able to fix the issue. I don't play the Iron Banner and I don't play the Trials of Nine because I don't do Crucible stuff. I don't do PvP, player versus player, in Destiny. Mostly because I just can't get a good solid crew to run around with. Whenever I have a negative experience in an MMO, it's almost always in PvP. Whether it's derogatory speech and behavior in chat, whether it's just straight up harassment. I've been part of many Kill the Girl campaigns once I come on mic, so I don't even go on mic anymore because of that. I just don't enjoy those experiences because they're almost always negative. There's way too many people dropping N-bombs that just make me uncomfortable.
So I agree. PvP.
So I'm straight just player versus environment in the game. And I think that, you know, if they can address not only the glitches, but also really kind of focus on some community standard stuff, I might PvP because, you know, the trials look interesting and Iron Banner has some really great rewards if you can get through. But man, oh man, like the risk reward there is just not, it's not high enough for me. And so I don't do it. But I'm still running around in Destiny 2. Still looking for people to run the Nightfall because I haven't done a Nightfall yet. I haven't done the raid yet. So you guys know the gamer tag. If you want to suit up and run it, hit me up. Hit me on the social. And just be like, yo, Ninja, let's go do this. We could do this. Because I want to do it. I'm looking forward to more stuff dropping. You know, there's supposedly more public events coming, more variety to public events coming, more adventures coming as the team is gearing up for the first expansion, which is expected sometime in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it because I'll tell you, the core of my PvE experience in Destiny 2 has been phenomenal. I've enjoyed the story, I enjoy the gameplay, I enjoy the enemies, I enjoy public events so much more. It's easier to navigate. I feel like there's always something to do, whether that's with people or by myself. So I'm just ready for more of it. So that's what I've got on the Destiny side of things. One thing I do want to touch on kind of quickly, which is not just strictly gaming, but it is starting to come into the nerd environment some. You know, there was in the news all the stuff with Harvey Weinstein and some other directors and people in positions of power in Hollywood being called to task for sexual harassment and opening up the dialogue about what is kind of pervasive in the entertainment industry, but really pick an industry, it exists, which is the harassment of women. And it started to trickle down into some of my more nerdy areas, specifically Screen Junkies, which I absolutely have loved that channel for years on YouTube. I subscribe, I check their stuff every day to see if there are new honest trailers, either for movies or game trailers. I watch the Screen Junkies show where, you know, they have various people in from the realms of video games as well as comic books and entertainment and talk about stuff. But they recently let go one of the founders because more women had come forward with their claims of sexual harassment against him, and they moved kind of swiftly to remove him from the company, remove him from the channel, and then they kind of went radio silent for a couple of weeks while they, as a group, met with Defy Media, which was their parent company, to talk about stuff, including people who had actually gone to HR to file official complaints, and nothing was really done as far as they were concerned. And I just wanted to comment on how I think that the more that we have these conversations and bring these things to light and make everybody, not just women, feel like they have a safe place to bring these things to the forefront, and that there'll not only be conversation, but there'll also be action taken, I think is great. Because when you look at kind of the entertainment industry, you know, I'll take video games specifically. You know, we've talked a bunch on the show over the years about things that we've wanted to do that we just haven't felt comfortable to do for basically the fear of the harassment that will come because we are women.
Right.
In an industry and talking about things that the culture is predominantly male, or the vocalness of the community is predominantly male and not necessarily overly welcoming of women. On top of that, not necessarily openly welcoming of women of color. That's really kept us from doing a lot of things, just because, frankly, we don't want to have to deal with the harassment, the haters, and all that stuff. You know, it has kept us from doing Let's Plays for the last 3 years. It has kept us from doing a video version of the podcast, which we've wanted to do for almost 5 years now. But when we get down into the brass tacks of, you know, the comment section that we know is coming, the get in the kitchen comments, the you don't know shit about what you're talking about, so because you're a chick, so get off the screen. We're not what most gamer dudes would put in the hot category.
Right.
When you look at, I'm a short, chubby black chick who's coming up on 40 very quickly. I know that I am not
the gamer girl. You don't look a day over 32.
God bless your heart. But I don't look like, you know, the ideal gamer girl that most of the community would want to see talking about games. And so, you know, that has precluded us from doing a lot of things. And it's also then kept some revenue streams unavailable to us because of that. I think that it's great to have these conversations. I think that it's great that Patreon, you know, in the wake of all of this, has made an announcement that they are no longer going to allow the adult content creators to use Patreon. So, you know, it's very well known that there are quite a few great-looking people who created pay-for perks in Patreon to be cam girls and guys, basically. Not necessarily heavy gamers, but hey, I'm hot looking and I'll play a game and you can
pay me and maybe I'll jostle my junk for a couple of seconds. You know,
and I'm not knocking it, okay? Because hey, if you got it, you flaunt it and work every gimmick that you have. But it does, I want to say preclude, but it does make it difficult for those of us that's not an avenue to find an avenue and an audience that will be embracive of us because, well, frankly, what they're looking for is some tits and ass with
ass, you know, and some gameplays.
And, like, you're not going to get that from Esh.
Right.
It's just not us. And it's a little sad that, given where monetization is and the algorithm right now on YouTube, we've pulled back on our Let's Plays because there's no money coming in there now. There was a little before and now there's no. And that's, you know, a direct result from changes that Google put in place because of things that some other notable YouTubers did, like the PewDiePies and what's his name? The angry guy.
Angry video game nerd, Angry Joe. There's a lot of angries out there. You need to be more Joe. Specific
the,
than that.
The guy that basically had his main channel and then had spun up his channel to specifically monetize and advertise to folks who would be in the alt-right camp. So there's a lot of that pervasiveness going on. And I think that, you know, the more and more that we put a light on these things and go, no, this isn't okay, and we don't accept these things, and we do expect a modicum of decency. I'm not saying that you can't be, you know, playing a game and tell somebody that they were a fucking idiot for being someplace that they shouldn't have been. You could do that. But when you start doing that to a personal level where you're coming at somebody based off of how they look, how they sound, their religion, their race, their sex, that's when it's, you know, less locker room talk and rage talk and gamer speak and just hate speak. And I think that this is a good point for us in the community to kind of establish what we will accept going forward and what we won't. Because while it's believed that the majority of the community is male, it's actually not. When you throw in casual gaming, the majority of the gaming community is female. It's not male. Just that we're not on mic. And we don't advertise blatantly that we are female simply for the fact and the fear of what comes next. When the youngins play in the games who have no filter and fear about any kind of responsibility or action being taken against them, take things to the extreme. We're going to be talking more and more about inclusivity and diversity as we move forward, because these are big topics. I think that it would be irresponsible to not talk about them as they pop up. So you're going to hear about that more from me. So on All right. that topic, there's been more conversation about the South Park game. You know, because more and more people have completed the game since it came out. I'm close to completing it. I have not yet. But there are quite a few people in the LGBTQ community who have been making comments as they've gotten deeper into the game of uncomfortability. And I think that, you know, like I mentioned in my first covering of the game last week, you know, I got to the point in the game where the game was asking me to clarify my gender and my sexual orientation. I had said that, you know, in this playthrough, I decided to be me, so I created a cis female black character. That's mm-hmm. how I identified. But you had the option to identify as transgender, and appropriate pronouns would be used. And no matter what you picked, as you went through those clarifying spots, once you did that, you would have a conversation immediately with rednecks who would basically say they weren't accepting of your kind in the town, no matter what that kind was, including if it was cis anything versus trans anything, which I thought was, for me, an enlightening moment for the game to put that in there and show people that no matter what skin you're in and path you walk, you're always gonna face people who are gonna be like, fuck you, because they don't understand you.
Right.
Whether you're part of the quote-unquote norm or not. But as you get deeper into the game, you clarify your race. You also clarify your spirituality and your religion. That was a little more kind of fun tongue-in-cheek to me than the first set. But there were a lot of people who, and I read an article that one woman wrote about, you know, being a trans person, felt like as she went through the game, that after making those declarations, it was still a, you're the butt of the joke. And yeah, you're the butt of the joke because the new kid is the butt of the joke in the game. But I could see how it would be especially raw for someone who that is their story and that is their life. You know, the moment, for example, in the game where you clarify your sex and your gender to Mr. Mackey, he then calls your parents to confirm this with your parents. And I could see how, you know, if I was transgender, that would be a triggering moment for me because something similarly probably happened during a point in time when I was in school when my parents were called in and a big
right.
hoopla was made.
I could see how that could be kind of triggering for somebody
right.
if they're
and,
not, you know,
and because
ready.
It's treated with such lightness, I could see how, for some people, that would absolutely be seen as, I'm the butt of the joke. And then you get further in the game, and if you've identified as anything other than cis, there are lines that happen if you talk with other people in the town where they make reference to you, and they're like, oh, aren't you a cute little boy, girl, whatever the heck it is you are. Again, that just kind of reinforces the, you're different, and I don't understand. And I think that it was done from a place of South Park humor. But again, I just feel like in this kind of environment, it's more of an opportunity to be embracive as opposed to isolating. Because I could see how where the lines, when they were stacked up one against another in this article, and there was like seven, it's like, yeah, that actually is very off-putting to me. And that's not a path that I walk. So I can only imagine how sad and hurt that would make someone who is transgender, who maybe is a fan of South Park, going through the game, then being able to, you know, have the epiphany of like, I'm going to actually able to be me in this game for once, and people are going to react to me as me. And then the reaction is almost always negative in a way from everybody that you talk to in the town. It's a place that, you know, missed the mark. I don't think it was done with any kind of
malice,
but it still comes across as, I think, hurtful. So I think
right.
being mindful of that and talking about it and bringing it to the forefront,
I think,
you know,
I think in that
helps.
Regard, like bringing it up and having people have to navigate that situation, especially if it's not something that they actually had to. Like, I think, you know, the thing about South Park has always been they exacerbate reality to a point where it's like, but it's so close to what I feel and think and believe. Like, it kind of takes that surreal moment, like that uncanny valley kind of feel to a situation, and then just touches it up just a little bit a little bit more. We all kind of feel awkward about the things that happen on South Park, but then when you sit there and we process it, it's like, well, like, with the whole election and all that stuff, like, that shock and that disbelief of what was happening, like, that's a real thing that we all experience.
I think that, you know, it's... at the core, people have to remember that when South Park isn't a cartoon for kids, it never was designed for that, and it is... run by a comedic team, and their brand of comedy is to hold up a mirror and just focus on and reflect back all the ugliness, and then they make their commentary on that ugliness that they see from their positions. That's what they do. And they use the framework of children to say all these things so that it can almost come across as all the way over the top, because you wouldn't expect it out of 8-year-olds, right?
Or not even necessarily that. I think at least my standpoint on kids is that kids are brutally honest from the get-go.
Yep.
Like, and we as adults are like, oh man, like, that's really savage, or like, oh man, like, don't say things like that. Like, we try to censor children, and children are unabashedly, like, just saying it how it is to them. Mm-hmm. So, like, it is their truest truth until they learn how to, you know, skirt around it and, like, puff and pander
until
and all of that.
They're taught.
To puff and pander and all of that. So I think they're using children as a vehicle to say the things that they want to say, but because of all of that social pressure to adapt and be a part of the group, adults don't anymore. Or, like, right. a lot of them don't, or only do it in small circles. And that's where all this weird distrust and this layering of, like, truth versus non-truth is happening. But, I mean, kids will walk up to you and be like, you smell funny. You smell right. like poop. Like, and right. that's it. Like, it's just statement.
And
it's,
you
there's no justification.
Smell like poop. And
you in fact, smell like poop.
Like, no, you don't do that.
Like, no. Like, if you smell like shit, like, literal shit, I'll be like, do you need assistance with your shit smell? and people get really embarrassed. But, you know, kids are just telling the truth. And, you know, so That's why I think they use kids as a vehicle. I would say
that, like, everybody equally gets bash time in the game. There's a point in the game where you're infiltrating the police station and you discover all the black people that the police have been arresting in the town, with the exception of yourself and Token, and you go up against the police to release them, and you discover that the police have been, like, praying and serving what they call an elder god. And this elder god that's like a Cthulhu knockoff, basically, requires sacrifice and doesn't, I'm saying here, quote, like white meat. So you have to feed it dark meat. So that's why they've been arresting all the black people, is to sacrifice them to this god. And so the whole battle is you basically trying to knock police back into range for this Cthulhu character to eat them, and that's the only way you can do damage to them, and you gotta feed, like, 4 white people before it just, like, explodes, and then you continue on your raid to figure out who is at the top of creating this religion that these cops are abiding by. But the entire time, like, you keep seeing the police chief and meeting up with him, and he's just, like, trying to explain that they're not being racist and that they're not doing these things. And sure, it appears that way, but it's not. You know, cops are people, too. And then they're like, you know, make a comment, and they'll be like, it's not like we're like so-and-so, who was David Duke, for example. We're just trying to, you know, remember our culture. And then somebody will walk up to him and be like, no, actually, they're a racist, blatantly, and Ku Klux Klan. And they're like, really? Really? Oh, well, shit. And then leave the room. So, like, there's always this commentary going on against, you know, conversations that we're having out in the cultural norm, and they just try to present it with, you know, the raunchiest humor to just kind of poke holes at it. But at it's going to trigger some people in some.
If we bring it up in an uncomfortable situation, one, it gets that ball rolling to have that dialogue. And hopefully, through that jarring moment of realization, we're all able to walk back to a place of, okay, here's the common ground. Like, here we are, starting at the same point of elevation and escalating it back down to where it actually sits. And, I mean, it's a risky technique to use in terms of reason and logic, But at least it gets the conversation out in the forefront. It builds its momentum, and then it allows the real discussion to happen. Hopefully.
I guess where I'm just going to kind of leave it, at least for me, for this, is that when it comes to South Park, both the show and the games, you can't take it at face value. And you shouldn't take it at face value. Because it's designed with more layers than that. And it's
meant to be an onion, y'all. Layers.
It's designed to do some things to make people uncomfortable, and hopefully that will spark some kind of conversation, or at least some introspective or some thought. That's what it's designed to do. You know, the whole piece where in the game where you have to do a mission with the gay fish and helping the gay fish moms get to heaven, which we all remember the gay fish episode if you watched South Park, but being about Kanye. Okay, like, there's a lot of people in the black community that got real bent out of shape about it. And I'm like, guys, take a step back. It's South Park. Not that it excuses anything.
It doesn't.
It's not an excuse, but just consider the source.
It provides a context where there may not have been one.
It's just like, okay, and like the fact that like Kanye's mom is like a blackfish, and it's like blackfish. It's like big lips, dark fish. It's like, I'm my baby. Like, it's just so stereotypical. So stereotypical. And you have to go, okay, I have to take this for exactly what it is, which is a stupid mission, which it basically is set up like that Unicorn Attack game from Adult Swim. Uh-huh. And Tappy Fish. That's basically what it is. It's like Happy Birds, where you're like trying to not hit these pillows by continually to tap, like, and they're just going on and on about how this is such a ridiculous thing. And like, it is. It's a ridiculous thing. That's the point. This entire thing is ridiculous. And all this focus on, like, celebrities and the things that they're going through, they're just people. Like, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, I would angle for more things like the South Park game to get more people to talk about these things and put them up there and have more dialogue around it than to not.
Agreed.
So that's kind of my stance on it. Again, I'm not excusing anything, because there are quite a few mirrors that they hold up that trigger me too. Where I'm like, really, guys? Really? Like the stereotypical strippers and the stereotypical classy stripper who's black and is not classy in like any stretch of the imagination. Like,
is that the big ass one?
No, okay. That's Boutet.
Boutet.
Yeah, no, classy is the one that is the informant that you end up saving from being dark meat for the elder god, and then she becomes somebody that you call in, you know, once
like a summon mission.
Yeah, she's like a summon.
Okay.
But once you save her, she's like driving around town in like a big pink Cadillac convertible.
Of course she is.
And it's just like, exactly.
This is That's how saying. You know I've succeeded, is when I have a giant pink Cadillac.
Right? Like, you know, it's just so stereotypical. But that's what South Park does. So if it's not your cup of tea, it's not your cup of tea. But I do give them credit for trouncing on enough things and tap dancing on enough nerves that it gets people to talk about them. That's all I got on that. So,
well then.
That's all I got. Like, I know, I have a lot of, like, you know, issues this week that I'm bringing.
No,
but I respect that the genres that I enjoy so much are bringing these issues to the forefront.
And kind of stepping in that boundary, like putting their toe in that water and letting those ripples happen.
Like,
I think is a big step towards, you know,
it is,
forward
and
momentum.
I'm kind of proud of them all for doing it. I really
Well, anyway.
Am.
Well, I'm glad that we're talking about, like, genre stepping, like, kind of out of their comfort zone and whatnot, because it's my turn to talk about
something.
It
is your turn. I'm going to shut up now, because that's really all I have. I have an anime in my back pocket, but I might hold that for the next episode that we do.
Well,
what do you have?
Super Mario Odyssey. I played it.
I was going to say, because I know that was on your schedule.
It was. So it finally got purchased. I've been really into Stardew Valley, which I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and how, yep, like, I have my farm life, and I have my real life, and I have my addictive.
And hopefully never the twain shall meet.
I mean, it's really kind of hard to distinguish my cows from my files.
As long as you don't dream about your cows.
No, I don't.
Okay, but, you're in a good place then.
But anyway, I wasn't sure if we were going to get it right away or, like, around release time, like, me and my husband, because I'm really into Stardew Valley. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever going to, like, I'm not jumping out of Stardew Valley until I do all the things that you need to do in it. And, like, he was like, you're really kind of obsessed with it. I'm like, once I get through the story and I get all the things, I will be done. And then I'll leave it alone. And then we can even delete it off our Switch because, you know, like, it does impede on my downtime. And it does impede on him using the Switch. So, I mean, I may just have to buy myself a Switch because, like, clearly my need to do stuff in Stardew Valley outweighs his doing anything on Switch. Like, I get up early enough where it's like, no, it's mine. type of deal. But we finally decided to get Super Mario Odyssey, and we spent a good chunk of early morning yesterday playing through it. And the great thing about Super Mario Odyssey is it does have a two-player aspect. But let me get a little bit into what's going on in Super Mario Odyssey and what's the deal? Because is it charming as fuck? Yes. Like, give me more of this sweet, sweet charisma, Nintendo. Like, I'm all about it. But anyway, getting the premise out of the way, you are Mario, you're hanging out with Peach. Bowser shows up in an all-white tuxedo with, like, a giant cap. He steals your girl, like, throws off her crown, puts this weird crown that has eyes on her head. His hat also has eyes, by the way. And okay. Bowser's talking so much smack at you, but, like, he kind of brings it. He's kind of like the guy in Destiny 2. I'm going to say his name wrong. Gaul? No. Gaul? Gaul? Gaul?
Gaul. Like, you gall. Have the gall to do this.
Okay. So, like Gaul shows up, like, I'm going to take your shit. And then he takes your shit, and then he beats you. And, you know, you're like, oh, man, this dude beat me? Like, that's kind of what kind of happens in the opening of Mario Odyssey. Because, like, Bowser comes up all pimped, and he's like, I'm Mr. Steal Your Girl. Look at me stealing your girl. Oh, by the way, I'm going to shred your fucking hat. Shred your hat. And Mario gets, like, taken the fuck out, kicked off the ship, plummets to what you think is possibly his death. And you see Bowser throw off his white top hat. And you're like, that's kind of weird that he would do that. And all of a sudden, you see the top hat kind of float up in air. And, like, it's got eyes and has, like, a little bit of, like, a Boo ghost body underneath it. And, like, the top hat is holding the front part of Mario's M cap. And, like, he, like, follows, like, the shattered pieces down to the ground where Mario's, like, unconscious. Mario's not dead, clearly, because that'd be a very short game that you played nothing of. And the little ghost hat guy revives you, sort of, and it's just like, hey, that was really bad. Like, he really messed you up. He stole your woman, he stole my sister, and then it flashes back to that tiara that I told you about that has eyes on it. And he's like, and we gotta get him because I need to get my little sister, so, like, we should join forces and, like, work together. And Mario's, like, really upset about his hat. Like, it's his signature. He's had it since birth. He is, like, emotionally dehinged by not having his hat. The ghost hat guy, whose name is Cappy, by the way, is like, oh, I'll be your hat. And, like, jumps on your head as, like, this top hat that's way too big because it was, you know, he was sized to fit Bowser, or, like, he conformed himself to fit Bowser. And, like, Mario's like, oh, this is, and mind you, he doesn't talk a lot yet, like, but he makes a lot of Mario sounds, you know, like, oh, it's me, you know, like, very stereotypical Mario. And Cappy's just kind of like, oh, the top hat's not your thing? Okay, I can fix that. And he turns himself into Mario's M cap, obviously without the M, because that's where the eyes are. And he's like, hey, like, being a cap, like, there's so many things you can do with me. Like, Cappy, I think, of all of the sidekicks that Mario has had in his lineage, his long lineage of games, going from, you know, Toad to Yoshi to, I mean, in those weird crossovers with Kirby and whatnot, like, and all of his suits and the whistles and all the rickety-rackety, like, Cappy comes out the gate with so many skills. I don't know why Cappy can't just do it alone. Like, he doesn't really need Mario with all the abilities that he has. But hey, like, I'm sure he's like, you gotta look good in front of your girl. I need to look good in front of my sister. Like, we're simpatico souls right now. So you are literally on this Hat Kingdom, Bennington Town, Bonneton Town, or something like that. And all of the citizens are top hats for boys and, like, weird 1930, like, dome hats for ladies. Like, signature, like, 1920s, 1930s, like, dome hats for ladies. And he's just like, we gotta find an airship so that we can leave this world and go to another one, because we're gonna follow Bowser and get our women back, like your woman and my sister. But like, we gotta get some moon power. And this is where my first like instinct in watching, because at this point my husband's just playing and I'm just absorbing, my first takeaway from this was, and I mean, I think a lot of people talked about it leading up to its release, which released on October 27th for those who didn't know, that instead of like in Mario 64, you know, where you had to go and collect stars from each of the paintings in the kingdom, the Mushroom Kingdom castle, now it seems like the collectibles in this Super Mario Odyssey are these moons. And, like, the moons have a very signature look. They look very similar to the suns that you collected in Mario Sunshine. And a lot of people are attributing Super Mario Odyssey to being kind of like a fusion of Mario 64 and Mario Sunshine. So if you've played both of them, jumping in the Odyssey should feel vaguely familiar. I also get a strong sense of Mario Galaxy from these games as well, because you're traveling from world to world. And, I mean, they're really taking the sandbox element from 64 and Sunshine and kind of from Galaxy in this and kind of making something very relatable, very palatable, and very accessible to Nintendo's core audience, which I think is what people are so enamored with this game. Because, like, everything is so vibrant and so colorful and, like, you know, the water looks beautiful. And you could tell a good game when you could see the water dynamics and, like, they're just pretty as all get out. Like, you want to take this game to prom and take all the pictures. You kind of want to hold up that line. Like, you want to take all the time. Like, you want to make the photographer annoyed with you because of how many pictures you want to take with Super Mario Odyssey. The whole course of this game, once you get your hat, is to travel to these other worlds and stop Bowser from marrying your girl. Because, like, apparently now you can just take women and, like, just marry them. Like, they don't have to say yes, apparently, in this universe at all. You could just take women.
I don't think that Bowser has ever been, like, a say yes person. I think pretty much we have a history, like, of Bowser being Mr. Steal Your Girl. And,
like, he's surprising me. Permission. Like, he's surprising me in this. Because, you know, like, in all the other games, yeah, like, yeah, he, like, steals your girl. Like, I'm gonna steal her. But, like, he's never like, I want to make a commitment to her. Like, he just wants to kidnap her and, like, rule her kingdom. But now he's all like, maybe now I want to...
decided, like, the best way to rule her kingdom is to, like...
is to marry her.
Your husband.
Like, he talked to a lawyer. It's like, you want to marry her. But she won't say yes to me. Well, I mean, you've been stealing her for years now. You could just steal her. Like, right? Like, he had some legal advice and is now trying to take a more, like, legal approach to world domination. And I mean, like, his white suit is fresh to death. Like, it's really nice. And I'm like, he's going through all this trouble, Peach. And, like, I get it. Like, he's your antagonist. He's been kidnapping you for years. Like, you guys don't have a good relationship. I get it. But, like, there's some more effort here. So, like, I would... and this sounds really bad, and I'm prefacing this right now, because as I say this in my mind, I'm like, this sounds horrible, and I would never tell anyone in their lives to do or believe in what I'm about to say. But in this instance of, you know, kidnapping, with the effort exuded, I would be, if I were Princess Peach, knowing that she's not a real person, I would be kind of flattered, like the smallest grain of flattery over the effort displayed here this time. Like, I'm still going to say no, but I'm like, aw, he put more effort in it this time. Like, I will acknowledge the effort spent. But anyway, from Bonnet Town, when you finally get your airship, you have to power your airship via the moons, which is why you have to get the moons from each of the worlds. And each world that you go to, like, Bowser has done something to fuck it up. Like, you end up going to a desert that, like, it looks all hot, and but there's also these weird giant, like, clear through ice crystals, and it's eerily kind of cold, but not like, you know, Breath of the Wild cold where, like, the sun's down and, like, you know you gotta put on your, like, your snow quill jacket. And then in the morning, put on your fancy girl outfit because you're in the desert. Like, it's not like that. Like, it's the sun is up, it looks hot, but it's also eerily cold.
Okay.
And you know that Bowser has done something. Like, he's gone to these worlds to grab things that he needs for this epic wedding. And, like, there's posters everywhere about this wedding. I'm like, Peach, if you're not about this wedding, why did you pose for them? Like, he's not holding you aggressively in these pictures. Like, you're standing there. Like, you're kind of about it. And you just don't want to admit it. Or, like, you're faking it. Like, you're radaring and you're about to submarine or, like, whatever the kids call it these days. I haven't figured out, like, if she's really not about it or not yet. Cappy and Mario, I think, make a really great pairing this game. And, like, I hope to see more coming from it. And, like, we're not too far in the game right now. I think we've made it to about the third or fourth kingdom out. They've, interestingly enough, established a tree system, like a branching system, where you have to make a choice as to what world you go to next. And it's not like, you know, in Star Fox, where you could go back to the previous one and reopen that other path. You only get one choice. You only get one shot to make the choice. And once you've branched off that way, the other option no longer becomes available at all. We had to make our first, like, split decision the other day, and I was like, oh, well, worst case scenario, we go here, and if we don't like this, we go there, and it doesn't give you that option at all. So I was like, wow, I'm like, this is really kind of this long, epic journey, which, I mean, when the game first announced its title as, you know, Super Mario Odyssey, I was like, what the fuck is the Odyssey for? Like, it wasn't lining up in my mind. And I was bringing that up to my husband when he was playing. I'm like, I still don't get why this is Odyssey and why there's a globe. And then all of a sudden, like, that weird, weird literature back from high school light flickered in the back of my brain, and we all have it. Like, you hear something random and you're like, I remember that from, like, my fifth grade, like, literature lesson about Tristan and Isolde or whatever her name was. And, like, the light starts flickering and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, babe, I totally get it now. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, Odyssey, in the title. I'm like, it's like Homer's Odyssey, you know, because Odysseus is, like, trying to get back home to his wife, who at this point, like, totally thinks he's dead and knows she's got to get remarried, and there's all these suitors who are trying to get all up in that. And she's all like, nah, I have to wait. I have to wait a little bit more, and then you have to prove yourself. I'm like, they're kind of loosely tying it here. Because here's Mario trying to get back, because when he gets beat up by Bowser in the beginning, he gets knocked out of the Mushroom Kingdom altogether. So, like, he's traveling back to the Mushroom Kingdom. This is my thought, because I haven't finished the game, so I don't know if that's true or not. But he's traveling back to the start to get his woman, very much like Odysseus was trying to get back to his wife, whose name I currently cannot remember, and I'm usually way better at this. And, like, he's going to all these different worlds, he's interacting with all these different types of people the same way Odysseus did in the Odyssey. And I was like, what? Good job, Nintendo. Good job linking that shit up.
Yeah, but Nintendo does that, you know? Like,
right, like, this... They always have their A-level work, especially for their trademark, like, flagship games like Zelda and Metroid and Mario. And, I mean, I really want Luigi to have, like, another Luigi's Mansion. Or, like, I just want a Luigi game where he finally, like, he's going after Daisy. Like,
yeah,
for real.
I'm with
like,
you.
Like, he needs
that
it.
That needs to happen.
Because it's like, I know
Luigi
that you
needs
made
another, like, soul outing.
Like, he just needs, yeah. And then, kind of in the secret in the back of my mind, I kind of want Wario and Waluigi to, like, have a game. Because, like, I know they're,
agreed,
like, you know, the polar opposites of Mario and Luigi, and they're, like, the bizarro versions. But I'm like,
but they deserve a game.
I think they do. And then I'm like, and if Luigi, you know, I shouldn't say just finally got a princess, because he's kind of had a princess for a while, just they don't get nearly enough screen time. Why don't Waluigi and Wario have negative under upside down princesses?
Yeah, you need Nega Peach and Nega Daisy.
Yeah. Like, we need, I think they need it. Like, they need to be fully fleshed out.
They deserve it.
They've been in the game long enough now. Like, there's got to be something more to them. Once again, that established why that all antagonists have that, like, we appreciate them more for. Like, Waluigi and Wario need their whys established. And not just, oh yeah, I'm the opposite of Mario, so whatever he wants, I want to take away. It's like, no, there's more to it than that. Like, there's so much more to it than that. And also, Mario and Luigi need to go to therapy, because Mario apparently has issues with Luigi, and Luigi is just, like, the goofy. Like, I always thought Luigi and Goofy would make excellent friends, because, like,
they're kind of bestest buddies.
Like, they're kind of both the underdogs to, like, the top dog, like, in this case, Mario and or Mickey. But, like, they're always there for their bud, even though their bud, like, pisses on them every day. Because, you know, we all have that one friend who, like, doesn't mean to be kind of like a butthole. Or, like, says they don't mean to be, but then they kind of are. But then, like, they know that they know you're going to show up in a clutch if they need you. Because, you know, you're a good person and they might not be. But, like, let me not delve too deep into the relationships of fictional characters.
That's another podcast.
But it's light. The controls from the few times I've touched the controller, because you use the Joy-Con separately in this game. So, like, Okay. Every time you're whipping Cappy around, because you whip him around things, like, you throw your hat everywhere, you're tossing your hat into every ring, and you're using the Joy-Cons as, like, you're, like, flicking. And, I mean, if you're a dude, you probably already have that wrist movement down. So,
oh, like, hey now.
Good for you.
We'll cast aspersions.
Or, like, because at one point you roll, and that's how you get around some places. Like, you curl up like a pill bug, and you roll around like an armadillo. And, like, you have to beat down your Joy-Cons like you're drumming, or like you're, like, using reins on a horse, sort of. So, like, Okay. They're finding ways to use the motion aspect to the Joy-Cons, which I appreciate. And then, obviously, in the two-player mode that I talked about a little bit earlier, like, one of you is obviously controlling Mario, and the other person is controlling Cappy. I have not done too much of that yet, but I'm looking to jump into doing some of that gameplay with my husband, because, I mean, who wouldn't want to be a magical cap that can also take over people's minds? I have not talked about that yet, and that's kind of the big power that Cappy has, is that he's able to, if Mario throws Cappy onto, like, a bad guy, like a Goomba or a flying Goomba or, like, the biggest baddie in the area, Mario is then able to, like, transport himself into Cappy, and then Mario is able to control that baddie and use that baddie's abilities to do other things in the world. So, like I said, Cappy is practically a god. All the Cap ghost spirit things from Boddington Town have this ability. So I don't know how Boddington Town hasn't just been going around enslaving people politely for decades, because they have the ability to do it.
We don't know that they haven't, though.
Like, no, they're way too cute. Like, they're way too cute.
They're too cute to be evil like that.
Like, the last time I said that, it was Madoka Magica, and boy was I wrong.
Yeah, you were wrong.
So, like, I could be wrong here. And, if you look at the cover art for Super Mario Odyssey, you know, like, Cappy does have, like, that one eyelid down, kind of like, I got a secret. I'm not gonna tell you.
I got a secret.
but anyway, I think it's super cute, and, like, they're playing with so many different facets in this world, because, you know, as when it first was released or teased at E3 several years ago, when we saw Mario in, like, New York City, air quotes, like, with all these super tall humans compared to, like, him, who was not tall at all, and it raised that whole big question of whether or not Mario was human ever to begin with. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a town, like, there is a world where it looks like New York. We haven't been there yet, so, like, I don't know what the name of the town is. But you're in, like, a prehistoric where eventually you can, like, take over a dinosaur, which I know they've shown clips about. They've shown, like, this New York town. There's, like, a desert town and, like, a lake town and, like, the ghost town. And there's, like, all these things. And, like, it is so wide and big and immersive, and there's just so many things you can be doing in each of these worlds that even after you finish gameplay, like the core critical gold path, like you could still go back and like feed that collector's need, like the one I have about most things. So I'm sure once I really get into Mario's Super Mario Odyssey, I'm going to be like, I have to collect all of the specialized coins. I have to get all of the moons. I have to take over all of the monsters so I can fill out my chart of what type of animals have I been. Like, there's just so much. There are weird paintings on each town that haven't been restored yet. How do I get the paint? Like, there's just so much to do. And I can't wait to check it all off. And I think that's where other people are sitting with Mario Odyssey, which they first were like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like it. And then, like, it's as charming as all get out.
Right. And but so here's my thing, because I've been on the fence about picking up the game, right?
Right.
Which is why it ended up on your assignment list as opposed to on my assignment list for stuff to cover for a holiday. I've been burnt out on Mario for a while. Like, a good while.
I mean, yeah.
You know, the last Mario game that I went out of my way to play was Galaxy. Galaxy was the last straight up Mario game.
So you didn't play Galaxy 2?
I did not play Galaxy 2. I watched you play some Galaxy 2, but I did not play Galaxy 2.
Oh, the little Lumos, the little star people.
I picked up Mario Kart 8 when I got my Switch. I should say my husband picked up Mario Kart 8 for me when I got my Switch. And that was actually by accident. He meant to pick up just the Zelda game, but the Toys R Us guy made a boo-boo, and so I ended up with Mario Kart. And I did play some Mario Kart 8. But I've been playing Mario Kart 8 since Mario Kart 8 originally came out, because this was just a port for the Switch from the previous Mario Kart game. So I don't really count that as a new Mario game, because it was a port of an existing Mario game that I had played on previous systems, right? My question is, as much as you are into the game, and, you know, it does look super cute. Okay, Nintendo has never had a difficulty creating a cute-looking game or a charming game, okay? And I picked up on that very clearly of how cute it is and how charming it is, okay? Pikmin is cute.
Very cute and charming.
Okay.
Like, it's got its nuance. Like, it has this thing you're like, aww.
Right.
But again, I get the same feeling from Patapon, so...
And Patapon is also a cute and charming game. It just happens to be not on the Nintendo platform.
Right.
My question about Odyssey is, because there's so much going on, and there's so much that you can do, and the way that the worlds are set up, would you say that it is a good bridge game between kids and parents, or with the way that it's set up, is it a more, or could it be considered more, of Nintendo's first focus on making an adult Mario game? And by that I mean, as an example, where you pointed out, you know, Bowser is trying to marry Peach. Not just kidnap her, like he's pretty much done the entirety of his career in Mario games as we know it. But this go round, he's got a suit, he's trying to walk down the aisle and actually, like, somehow make this commitment to Peach.
He's trying to, like, Game of Thrones political little finger this shit.
You know what I mean? Right. So, which is a complete veer off the path that we know of Bowser.
Right.
You know? And then you have Mario in a world, in worlds where you have, you know, Cappy that, you know, is assisting him on his quest and is taking over people in order to achieve Mario's goal.
Right.
You've got Mario now in worlds where it looks like reality, as opposed to we've always just only been in the Mushroom Kingdom. Because, like, even
or we're just space, or we're just in the parallel universe where our reality is not ever established.
Right. You know, we're just, every Mario game has taken place inside the Mushroom Kingdom. Even in Galaxy, the universe.
I mean, it's the space. It's the space of Mushroom Kingdom.
It's the universe of the Mushroom Kingdom. Like, every planet you go to is, you know, cartoony Mushroom Kingdom.
Right.
So that entire universe took place in the Mushroom Kingdom. And so this is kind of the first foray to maybe
kind of break
the Mushroom Kingdom.
Like, break that glass a little bit.
Right. So
or, like, make that glass more see-through.
Is this Nintendo acknowledging that maybe their user base is beyond just the child base? That it seems like
I would strongly advocate yes. I feel like there's enough in this game that, you know, if young kids who've never played in any other Mario game in their life, which most of them have had 3DSs, so there's, I'm sure they have. But if they never have, and they, like, just popped into existence and was given a Switch with this game, like, this would be a great entry game for kids now to come into. However, I think it was strongly stipulated that Nintendo was really looking to make a Mario game that would satisfy and appease their core Nintendo audience, which I believe their core group have been their fans who have been with them since the very beginning. So they had to keep, you know, as original to Mario as they could, while doing something innovative with him, while still, you know, operating under the continuity, italicized, underlined, of what we have seen in the canon. So, I mean, but I definitely think they were pandering more to their core audience versus young kids. I don't think I've come into any, like, adult jokes, per se, because I think they still want to be able to reach out to younger ages. But the nostalgia in me, as for someone who played through Mario 64 religiously.
Yes. It was your religion.
It was my religion.
And then Star Fox became your religion.
Eshmom was not too happy about how much time I sat in front of that TV. But for me, like, it already hit a lot of those sweet notes, like, mechanic-wise, and how Mario operates, and how he interacts in the world, and, you know, all those sweet notes that bring me back to Mario 64 present. You know, and then it brings me back to, like, Super Mario 3 and Super Mario 2. Ugh.
But how do you really feel about those? No, we don't have time.
No, we don't have time for that.
It's time.
But ultimately,
thumbs up.
Two thumbs up, already out of the gate. And I imagine once we finish it that I'll probably still have my thumbs up. Or they'll just be gripping my Pro Controller or the Joy-Cons, and then I'll have, like, death grip. But if you have a Switch and you haven't picked up Odyssey, and you were, like, kind of on the fence about it, I mean, worst case scenario, if you have a friend who has it, have them bring it over and then play it. And then decide if you want to invest. But it was a purchase I'm glad me and my husband made, because we are both enjoying it immensely when I'm not playing Stardew Valley.
Well, there you have it. Double thumbs up for Super Mario Odyssey. And next time we get together, I will have Assassin's Creed Origins stuff for you. I know I talked about being on the fence about that, but our wonderful friends at Ubisoft sent us a copy to review. So I'm going to jump into that, and I'll be talking about that on our next podcast. So if you enjoyed the show, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast, which you can do on our website, electricsisterhood.com. The links are right there on the homepage. Or you can do it through iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. That ensures that you get our new episodes as soon as we put them out for consumption on the web. So please make sure that you do that. Also, make sure that you bookmark our site, electricsisterhood.com, because we put out new content every week. That's videos of unboxings and reviews, as well as our own reviews, previews, and editorials about everything going on in the gaming realm as well as in anime. So please make sure that you do that. Comment on our stuff, share our stuff, introduce us to your friends and family, because we definitely want to get those numbers up of people who know about us so that we're not the best kept secret on the internet. So make sure that you bookmark our site, that you check us out on social. We're on Instagram and Twitter at ESH News, pumping out all kinds of content all day long, including some videos, quotes, some funny graphics, and, you know, looks at stuff that we're playing. So make sure that you like our stuff, that you share our stuff, that you follow us on our social channels. You check out our YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/electricsisterhood, because we have some Let's Plays there as well as unboxing videos. So definitely subscribe and hit the bell so that you get notified when we put out new content so you can check it out. Make sure that if you enjoy what we do across all of our social channels and on our site and on our show, that you check out all the other great content creators that are part of the Ash Network. And that includes KBD over at b3crew.com with his bi-weekly podcast, the No Borders, No Race podcast, where he spins all kinds of great music that you probably never heard of from artists that you haven't heard of, but you should get to know across all different kinds of realms, including J and K-pop, as well as rock and indie stuff. Be sure that you check out smashrook.com and our homie Hamsterman2049, who does new streams every Wednesday night at 9 Eastern on Twitch of games that he's playing, retro and otherwise. Be sure that you're a part of that. You check that out. You can get that link just before he goes live on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Lanavesh. You can also catch it in our social streams and on smashrook.com. Our homie Phil, the Issues Guy, with the most enjoyable recap show I've ever seen on YouTube, with Phil's recap and review. Definitely make sure that you subscribe and hit the notification bell on that one, because his recaps are something that you definitely don't want to miss. You can even call in and be part of the recaps live and be in chat. So be sure that you're checking that out. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, from comic books and anime and manga to video games, movies, and more. You name it. If it's nerdy in any way, those guys are talking about it over at nerdcrave.com. So make sure that you bookmark all of our sites, check us out on social, engage with our content, share us with your friends, and hit us up if there's anything that you want us to check out or review. You can do it by dropping us an email, using the contact form on our website, hit us up on social, direct message us on Facebook, like however you want to get the signal to us. Just let us know. And if we do, we'll give you a shout out in the show. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, folks.
Titties.